Hello and welcome to another edition of the Knollcast. This is Bud Elliott, your host of the number one Florida State podcast out there. And Ingram Smith, my co-host, is on vacation. So Ingram, hope you're enjoying the beach. This morning's episode is going to be me solo. And because of that, it's probably going to be a little bit shorter than normal. It's hard to give a monologue show for an hour, especially if you don't run as many commercials as those radio guys do, because they really only do about 40 minutes of radio, maybe 38. All right. Speaking of commercials, we are brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce. Louisiana Hot Sauce, three simple ingredients, peppers, vinegar, and salt. Actually used it last night, some chipotle. Didn't get enough of that hot salsa there, so I added a little kick to it. Just enough, not too hot, just right. And I like that you can control the flavor with Louisiana Hot Sauce. If you give it a couple shakes, you're not going to ruin your food by it being too hot. You can give it a couple more if you really want to spice it up. It's a very versatile, cheap condiment. And hey, Louisiana Hot Sauce, they love college football and the Knolls just like you do. So very much appreciate them sponsoring the show. All right, we're going to start with baseball. And normally we don't do a whole lot of baseball or basketball on this show. I'm a little more comfortable discussing baseball because I don't understand basketball quite like I do baseball. I actually think I like baseball more than football sometimes. At least it doesn't feel like work. And man, watching Florida State this weekend in the regional, that was awesome. That was fun and entertaining and I think really just promising. Didn't you come away from that game with a real feeling of energy and excitement and belief that Florida State can make some real noise if it gets out to Omaha? For those that don't know, Florida State went to Game 7 of the regional, beat Auburn to advance to the Super Regional, thanks to a ridiculous, out-of-nowhere, shutout performance by Will Zierzow, who just incredibly had not pitched, I think, in 26 or 28 days, had not thrown even six innings this year, and that came, his longest start came in relief. He goes out there against Auburn and absolutely shoves. Nine innings, double-digit strikeouts, hardly any base runners, had a no-hitter going for, five, six innings? Just one of the all-time out-of-nowhere performances, I think, by any Florida State athlete in any sport. I had to think about this, and I think Ingerberg and I are going to discuss this on a future episode, but maybe Davidus Dulkey's against Duke, although he was a starter, so potentially this is more out of nowhere. Marcus Allison against the Gators, although if you look back, he was the QB of that team. He really didn't carry that team. Well, Zierzow was by far the most valuable player in this game, which to date is Florida State's most important game of the season. But it's more than just one game. Given what Zierzow is now doing, I think you really roll into the Super Regional, which, by the way, is going to be played in Tallahassee, Florida, because Sam Houston State was able to knock off Texas Tech. So Florida State rolls into this regional. And I think going into this weekend, you probably have about 30 innings that you feel really good about between your starters and relievers. I mean, you got Holden, Compton's throwing a little bit better. Obviously, Zierzow, I think there's some discussion. Maybe do you start him? Do you want to use him kind of in longer relief? Maybe have him ready to come into the ballgame if one of your starters struggles? And look, it's all hand on deck. I mean, bullpenning is one of the keys to postseason play. But to have 30 innings that I think you feel really good about going into a weekend, that's a great, great sign. And I know everybody's going to be watching it either at the stadium or at Madison Social or Township or Central, our fine sponsors of the For the Table Restaurant Group. The hitting is really good now, too. And I think it had the potential to be for most of the year. I mean, you've got so many guys on this team. It's a deep, deep lineup now. Mendoza's starting to come around. Quinton Aporte is kind of your classic slugger, and I feel like it is dangerous in the middle of the lineup. I like most of their approaches at the plate. They didn't do much in the way of bad fielding on the weekend either, which helped out the arms certainly. They, at least in the championship game, didn't run the bases like jerks, like they quite honestly have most of the year, and it's kind of uncharacteristic of a Mike Martin baseball team to run the bases poorly. Granted, they have done it some in recent years. About the only thing I didn't like, and I'm not going to talk about this for a long time, but I think we'd be doing a disservice to our listeners if we didn't discuss it, was the bunting. Mike Martin has been a tremendous manager for, 40 years. He has led this program. He built this program. He is this program. There is no doubt. If you talk to his former players, they absolutely love the guy, to the point to where they'll defend him on some really irrational stuff. He's a great manager of people, although, you know, earlier this year there was kind of some dissension within the ranks, certainly, and looks like the guy's maybe over that, which is good. Good timing on, you know, to get that water under the bridge going into postseason baseball. He's one of the best managers of all time. I fully believe he deserves to get next year to get that all-time wins record and retire as the all-time winningest baseball coach. But the decision he made against Auburn is really indicative of why certainly there is some luck involved in him having no championships. Because, look, you see a team like a Fresno State win or any of these teams that are kind of random winning this thing. You see Virginia beat Florida when Florida had far superior talent. But there is no doubt that luck plays a role. However, Mike Martin not having a title is not all luck. When you get to the postseason, managing a program is not as important, because if you've done it well, you're already getting there. If people who don't manage their programs well don't consistently get to the postseason, and 11 certainly does that. But what is magnified in the postseason, because the talent levels on teams are more similar, is tactical decision-making. And Martin's decision to bunt with men on first and second, with one of your best hitters at the plate, who was only grounded into one double play all season, is one of the worst decisions you will ever see a coach at Florida State make. That decision is so much worse than anything Leonard Hamilton has done in the basketball game, or anything Jimbo Fisher has ever done. I don't watch enough softball to know if the softball coaching is good, but as far as the major three sports, absolutely horrendous. If you did that in the major leagues nowadays, you would be fired as a manager. They just wouldn't tolerate that. It shows such a lack of understanding of run expectancy. And we can talk about how some famous coaches, you know, Joe Torre or Sparky Anderson or Tony La Russa, and have those guys like the kind of the psychology of getting a one-run lead early in the game and whatnot. But they all coached before we had advanced statistical modeling, before we actually knew what the expectation was and just how badly you were hurting your win expectancy by bunting. For those who don't know, you can Google it. You can look on TomahawkNation.com. Just type in Mike Martin bunt micromanager run expectancy in Google, and you'll get it. It's about the only result out there on the subject. And what we know is that it actually reduces your chances of scoring runs substantially. And the key word there is runs. If you bunt in that situation, you may, under some simulations, increase your chance of scoring exactly one run, but you drastically reduce your chance of scoring multiple runs. And that's a problem, especially in a game in which you're starting a kid who has not been a regular starter for you. You have no way of knowing if he's going to throw a complete game shutout. In fact, I think you have to expect that he's only going to give you a couple of innings before he probably gets lit up some. You could not have possibly known that he was going to come out and shove like that. And even if you had a hunch on it, you still don't do that because you're not facing an ace. Florida State had Auburn's pitcher on the ropes, and they let him off the hook. It's a choke artist move by Mike Martin. You didn't do it all regular season. His son, who is one of the best hitting coaches in all of college baseball and is a really bright baseball mind from all accounts, has got to be just cringing when he sends this bunt signal down. If I'm him, I purposely, you know, mess that up. I must have given the take signal or something, or the swing away. Oops, my bad. Because it's absolutely ridiculous. If Florida State lost that game, it would have been on Mike Martin. As it is, his players overcame his tactical decision errors. That's the kind of stuff that puts you behind the eight ball and gets you beat in the postseason. And trust me, my Twitter lit up. This is classic choke artist Mike Martin, choke job, you know, all this kind of stuff. Hey, he's he's tightening it up, you know, as postseason comes. And as much as I like the job he's done over his career, it's really hard to defend a decision like that. And it's not opinion. It's not preference. It's just purely bad managing. My hope, as somebody who wants to see FSU baseball succeed, and I want them to win a ring out in Omaha and to beat Sam Houston State this weekend and go to Omaha. My hope is that that was just a momentary freak decision. And look, assuming that requires you to suspend some disbelief with the fact that they kind of did in the sixth too, in a slightly different situation. But my hope is that maybe he gets it out of his system. Maybe Meat is able to talk to him and say, "Hey, Dad, why would you do this now? We didn't do this all year. This sends a bad message to your kids that you don't trust them to swing the bats. And one of the best things they do is swing the bats. We know they're not fielding whizzes, right? This is a slugging team. It needs to hit the ball. Playing for one run in the first inning just doesn't make any sense. Bunting is okay in certain situations. Late game, close, certain situations where you know exactly how many runs you are likely to need to win the game. Basically, if you're tied or down a run or perhaps up a run in the eighth or the ninth inning, because you know exactly how many you need to tie or win or push your lead from one to two. In the first inning, you need to play for the shootout. You need to play for the slugfest. It would be such a shame to, and I look around in this field and there's not that many great teams left. Florida State could win the College World Series if they pitch like this and they're allowed to swing away. And I'm not saying they will if those things happen, but they're going to have a damn good chance to do so. But the second part of that is important, allowed to swing away. You cannot use your precious outs in such just foolish fashion. And I know when you talk to guys who are pro baseball scouts, they bemoan the terrible lack of managing skill in the college ranks. And that's why you never see guys go from college baseball to the pros for the most part, because the good ones are mostly in the pros, especially tactically, which is kind of crazy because some of this stuff just isn't that hard. Just don't bunt. It's amazing that we still see this kind of stuff go on. Hopefully they can get it out of their system and knock it off. All right, now let's turn to a little football. Last time we spoke, Taraja Mitchell, the four-star linebacker out of Virginia, I expected him to commit to FSU. This was about, a week or maybe 10 days ago that we spoke. And he did not. He committed to Ohio State. I think that surprised most people who cover Florida State. Certainly everybody I spoke to at kind of the other big websites as well felt that he was going to FSU. And I think FSU's coaches felt like they were going to get him. And ultimately, he picked the Buckeyes. But I'm here to tell you, you shouldn't be that worried about this. Florida State has had some very bad luck at linebacker. You know, you go through the guys that who have not panned out. Delvin Purifoy obviously had that catastrophic ankle injury. Kane Dobb kind of ate himself out of school / maybe didn't go to class enough. And I don't know what he's doing now football-wise. And you've had a couple other incidents. Shamar Kilby-Lane, was ineligible last year. My sources have actually said he has not been around the team at all this spring. Since spring. So I don't know what to make of that. I do know that the greatest indicator of future ineligibility is previous ineligibility. Certainly, you could apply that to Matthew Thomas too, but I don't think Thomas is in trouble. From what I've heard, Kobe Lane has not been around workouts, and that's from some people who actually participate in the workouts. So, yeah. But Florida State, I think their linebacker recruiting is still going very strong. They have Amari Gaynor already in the class. You could look at Rosendo Lewis out of Deerfield Beach, who's another strong candidate. They only need to take two this year, I believe, and have done a really good job recruiting linebacker over the last 2 years. Let's look at this. Last year, they signed Adonis Thomas, a JUCO, with 3 years to play three, so he has 3 years left, and Leonard Warner, a promising four-star linebacker out of Georgia. And then among your sophomore ranks are the guys you signed in the class of 2016, Josh Brown, Emmett Rice, Dontavius Jackson. That's a hell of a trio, not to mention that you also have Matthew Thomas and Roderick Hoskins this year as your starters. Florida State's three deep at linebacker, which you know is basically six guys because they only played two at once, is very impressive. And I think you're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think you actually have almost a four deep at the position that you feel like you can trust. So not worried about that. Florida State fans should not be worried about linebacker recruiting. I like Taraja Mitchell. I think he's an excellent prospect. I also do think that he is maybe a little bit closer to his ceiling as a prospect, given his, you know, how early he grew and how early we knew about him compared to perhaps some other prospects. But I think he's an excellent player and not somebody who Florida State should be, you know, happy with losing. But examine the pattern. The only real programs that Florida State loses kids to on a consistent basis are Alabama and Ohio State. And I know FSU fans don't like to hear this, but as somebody who does national recruiting, kind of has a little more detached perspective, those are about the only two coaches, I think, that you would take over Jimbo Fisher when you consider all things, you know, that go into this process. Saban and Meyer are sort of inner circle Hall of Famers. They are kind of the Willie Mayses of college football coaching. Now, I think Jimbo Fisher will be a Hall of Famer if he coaches long enough, but those two guys are just on a different level. If you started losing a bunch of kids to lesser programs, then I would tell FSU fans, hey, you know, let's examine what's happening here. Why is this happening? But to lose them to the only two programs that have been consistently better than you shouldn't be a surprise. It's just a continuation of the current status and is not that big of a deal. I don't think anybody expects to out-recruit Alabama and Ohio State. At least they shouldn't based on the past couple of years. And I don't really see any real reason for that to change anytime soon. So the couple folks who emailed us, and then for the most part, not many did, and they were all up in arms about it, I simply say, guys, I wouldn't worry about this too much. Now it's time for the word from our second sponsor, For the Table Restaurant Group, which consists in Tallahassee in College Town of Madison Social, Central, and Township. Three great concepts. Township being their beer garden, Central being their awesome Italian joint, and in Madison Social, which is kind of upscale pub grub, not your typical greasy sports bar food. Tonight, I'm gonna highlight a few things that they're working on. Got some cool things coming up for this weekend, actually. Did you know that this weekend is, on Saturday, is National Rosé Day? Well, Central did, and check this out. They have a rosé, limoncello, sorbet, and fresh lemon. I think they're calling it a frosé. Basically, it's like an alcoholic lemon Italian ice, which sounds really refreshing as the temperature starts to creep up now in Tallahassee. That is not something that you want to miss, in my opinion. Also, I believe on Friday, Madso tells us here on their Twitter account, at Madso Social, that Central, you can get one of those, and it comes with free pizza bombs. And if you've not had one of the pizza bombs at Central, you really got to check that out. All right, now Township focuses on urban-styled street food with their beer garden, which is pretty cool because you can get a lot of really creative stuff there with an awesome selection of brews, one of Tallahassee's best. So they bring us this message, and they do a really cool kind of street-style hot dog every week. Check this out. The hot dog for next week just got real. Texas toast layered with knockwurst hot dog, cherry smoked bacon, house-made chili with Havarti, smoked Gouda, and cheddar cheese, topped with beer cheese and bacon. It's basically a seven-layer hot dog. Now, you need a fork for this. I think you probably need two, because I may want to share this with a friend, but this looks really good. I would definitely want to take one of those down. And then finally, Sunday rolls around, and you know where you got to be. That's right, Madison Social for brunch. Check this out. This Sunday, the Tallahassee brunch date with Proof Brewing Co. You start with, check this out, $40 ticket gets you and your brunch date. A Hottie Tommy or hummus, two select brunch drinks, two brunch mains, which if you haven't had them are really, really good. My wife likes to go there when we're in town. I do as well. We usually hit the brunch before we leave town. And two tokens for some core Proof beer. Obviously, if you know Proof Brewing Company, an excellent local brewery there in Tallahassee. For the Table has been a loyal sponsor of us for a long time. We absolutely love when you show them some love and told them you're going to tell them you heard about it on the Knollcast. Again, Madison Social, Central, and Township, three great spots in Collegetown, right there in the shadow of Dope Campbell Stadium. Whether you live in Tallahassee or just visiting, do go check them out. All right, now let's talk a little quarterback recruiting. Tuesday night or Wednesday night? The days are kind of running together now. Justin Fields, decommitted from Penn State. He's a quarterback from Georgia, a five-star, Florida State's top quarterback recruiting target on its board. And I think you can say, yeah, this is a good sign for the Noles that he decommitted. Justin Fields, I compared him to essentially a bigger Russell Wilson, kind of a Russell Wilson type without the size questions. Very good arm, strong release, smart kid, and yet very mobile. Not necessarily on all these design runs, but a strong scrambler and a guy who can scramble to chuck it like Russell Wilson. Very difficult to sack. I think very frustrating to play against, and a major loss for Penn State, no doubt. He opened his commitment up, I think, as most people expected him to do. In fact, if you listen to us on the Knollcast, we actually have predicted this for a while. We said, hey, this recruitment is not over. So the immediate question becomes, who is in the driver's seat here? And I think depending on who you talk to, you're going to get a variety of opinions on this. I can tell you that there are five staffs who think they have a shot. Florida, Georgia, Auburn, Florida State, and Alabama. And I believe all of them, except for Alabama. I actually think Alabama has a better chance to flip some kids from California. Maybe the kid committed to Utah or the kid committed to USC. At least that was the chatter out in Los Angeles where I was last week for the Elite 11 quarterback competition, which, yes, Fields did make it to the opening. A couple other guys, who I'll discuss in a minute, did not. Who is truly out in front, though, for Fields? I think it might be Florida at this point. I know certainly some of their media feels that way, and seemingly all of their fans on social media feel that way, which I'm a little bit surprised because I know some insider intel. They're still recruiting the heck out of Ohio State commit Emory Jones, and they're still really chatting up NC State commit Devin Leary, who's out of New Jersey. To me, those aren't necessarily the actions of a coaching staff that has this thing totally locked up. I also talked to somebody who covers UF and who I think is very fair about UF, and I said, do you think they're going to get him? And he said they might, but, and this is basically verbatim, as he told me, I know the rumors at UF, but when has McElwain and his staff beaten out Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, etc., for someone those schools really want? I don't trust the staff to get a big win. It's had a few head-to-head wins, but they were over bad programs like Arkansas for Tyree Cleveland, not over big-time staffs. Which, hey, that's kind of negative about a school you cover, but it's probably the truth. How is Florida in on field so well, despite the fact that their quarterback play under Jim McElwain has been just a total disaster? Well, I think if I'm Florida, the way I'm going to pitch it is this. Felipe Franks is not ready to make an impact. We had to go out and get a one-year grad transfer in Malik Zaire because Franks has not made the progress we wanted him to make. We always knew that he was a very raw prospect coming in, and it just doesn't look like he's going to be the guy. So that means after Zaire leaves, after this 1 year, unless he's able to get two somehow, but I'm not going to mention this, I'm recruiting. After Zaire leaves, Justin Fields, you're the guy. You can come in and start in the swamp day one. And that's very appealing. Kids want to play early. It's a huge deal. Now, is that the entire pitch? No, certainly not. I know Florida has a great business school that Fields likes a lot. But I'm not totally convinced he goes to Florida. I don't think his recruitment's over by a long shot. It's going to be important to follow the visits and see where he ends up. I think that the longer this goes, the better it is for Florida State, though. They typically do a really good job in these situations. Next is Auburn. Auburn has a couple major connections here. Number one, they're an Under Armour school. If you subscribe to the AAU basketball theory of recruiting, which I think is becoming more prevalent in college football, based on what I hear about kids being told not to go to this event or that event because it's, you know, they don't wear the brand that your future college is going to wear. There may be something to that. Cam Newton is the Cam Newton runs Fields 7-on-7 team. It's an Under Armour team, obviously, because Newton's an Under Armour athlete. He was at Auburn as well. I think that gives Auburn an in. Cam Newton is Justin Fields' idol. Cam Newton played for Gus Malzahn, not as a head coach, but as a coordinator. He really likes Chip Lindsey, Auburn's offensive coordinator as well. They've done a good job with him. He would fit that offense extremely well. It's, you know, a school he grew up liking. I actually think in some ways Auburn is being underplayed here by the media, who kind of all assume that Fields is going to Florida. I mean, especially if Jarrett Stidham has a big year at Auburn, which I think he might do. He might be the best quarterback in SEC. He could easily jump to the NFL, and then that would leave a lot of early playing time for a kid who wanted to commit there, especially a kid who's as advanced as Justin Fields is. So keep an eye on Auburn there for sure. Georgia's the in-state school. His sister is signed to play softball there. I have a hard time seeing him go into Georgia because they just signed back-to-back five stars in Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm. But at the same time, I can't 100% rule it out. And then there's the school in Tallahassee, which has developed more good quarterbacks recently than all three of these schools combined under Jimbo Fisher. Three guys drafted in the first round. I think two of them are still in the league. All of them got a boatload of guaranteed money and are living the life. Three first rounders in a decade is just absolutely insane, and yet Fisher's done it. It's the track record. You go back further, even what he had at LSU, also very impressive. I think the success with quarterbacks has to carry the day for FSU and Jimbo Fisher. You have to say, look, we had our guy in Malik Henry. There's no way DeAndre Francois would be starting if Malik Henry had stayed clean in Florida State and had kind of stayed on a development path as opposed to screwing up a bunch and getting, I don't want to say getting booted, but, you know, no longer being there or maybe no longer welcome. And then DeAndre Johnson obviously punched that girl in the bar and got booted, which, you know, unless you're Bob Stoops, is about the only choice you have, and I think the right choice. Florida State can offer some playing time, too. Fields is more talented than the two guys FSU signed last year. There's no doubt in my mind about that. The question is, can you promise early playing time when you have a redshirt sophomore, DeAndre Francois? I think that depends on whether Jimbo Fisher believes his own line about how Francois is going to make a lot of money in the league. I personally don't think he's going to be a high draft pick. But look, maybe he'll leave school early if he has a big year, and then you would have a real opening to say, hey, we're going to have a true three-way quarterback competition. At the same time, if you don't get Justin Fields, I don't think it's cause for panic. Florida State has, under Jimbo Fisher, almost always had at least good quarterback play, and for the most part has had excellent college quarterback play. I think Jimbo Fisher's track record really, you know, kind of bears that out, and there's no reason to doubt it. In fact, having been at the Elite 11, I fully agree with the decision to not offer Joe Milton, who I don't believe is as talented as James Blackman, the kid FSU signed last year, but is just as raw. He did not make the opening and honestly struggled out there quite a bit. He just needs to completely retool his mechanics in some ways with the long delivery, and had some of the more wild passes of the weekend. He's nowhere close to being a college starter. Now, I think his upside is tremendous, but I think there's a reason Florida State did not offer him. And if you believe some people, he is one of the two QBs that UF passed on, along with the kid Miami took, Arthur Sikowski. I don't know about the Sikowski thing, but I do think that they probably passed on I do think Florida may have passed on Milton as well. Kid I would take an eye on, though, is Carter Bradley, son of Gus Bradley, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's a kid with some good size, kind of young in the face, which to me suggests that he's still developing, knows where to go with the ball. Footwork is developing, but man, good arm, throws the deep ball with great touch. Certainly, I just got to see him in drills and 7-on-7, so it's not live bullets going, but Carter Bradley is a name to remember and a kid who I think is going to start adding some very major offers very soon. We know also that Florida State is still after Emory Jones, the Ohio State commit out of Georgia. Emory did not get an invite to the Elite 11. I was a little bit surprised by that. He showed me some really good things on the weekend, can throw a variety of routes. I think the one thing that held him back was ball placement. Some of the throws they got graded down on were caught, but in reviewing all the clips I took of him, many of them were behind the receiver, not necessarily in stride, which, hey, you do have to grade somebody down for that. I agree with that. I don't agree with all the guys that Elite 11 took. I think Jones, based on his overall track record, probably deserved to go, but he got snubbed. FSU's still very much in on him. Tyler Shuck, who I've previously referred to as Tyler Shaw or Tyler Show, but in speaking with him, the way to pronounce it is Shuck. That's S-O-U-G-H, but it's pronounced Shuck somehow. Kid out of Chandler, Arizona, has picked up Florida State, Georgia, Michigan, Cal offers, North Carolina as well. I do not expect him to pick Florida State, and I expect him to make his decision fairly quickly. So that's going to be something to watch there. We will see what happens post-commitment, if he still tries to take a visit to Florida State, if they're still that interested. But I think he's promising. Kid gets rid of the ball fairly quickly, 6'4", about 180, but with room to grow. Certainly, I think he'll put on a lot of weight in a college system. That's another kid FSU likes. And then Jace Reuter, probably the most intriguing name on the board. Reuter is a Kansas kid, and I mentioned him briefly last podcast. A Kansas kid who has played safety at times. He's listed as a safety on some sites. Picks up offers from North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida State. I think Georgia came in with one. And lo and behold, he decommits from Tulsa. Now, sorry, Tulsa, but you're not going to hold on to a kid when he gets those big-time offers. He plans to come visit Florida State. I think Florida State is pretty excited about having him in camp. That's a name to watch. You think about when they've identified some of the kids who they've had success with. Jacob Coker wasn't identified until, I think, July, before his senior year. Now, did he have success at Florida State? No, but he won a national championship and was a pretty damn good college quarterback for that year that he got to start for the Tide. Not all kids are identified early. In fact, just recently on SBNation.com, if you click on the recruiting tab, you can see my story on the top 20 unrated prospects. And that I don't mean just underrated. I mean kids that literally have no star ranking as of the time I posted that. But yet, in talking to college coaches, which I have to do for my SBNation job, they rave about these guys. And they think they're going to be 3, 4, maybe a couple of them 5-star level prospects. The recruiting rankings are just not up to date right now. At the very best, they're incomplete. And that's why I don't think it's worthwhile to pay much attention to them. Florida State is seventh nationally right now. It's not a big deal to me, and I don't think people should really care about it that much at this point. I'd be very surprised if Florida State does not land a good QB in this class. Just don't think it's going to be much of a struggle. Got a little bit of roster news for you here. Florida State removed Keith Bryant from its official Seminoles.com roster. He participated in spring. Florida State did not make an announcement about him being off the roster until after we reported that he was arrested for driving on a suspended license habitual. I can't tell you exactly when he was removed from the roster. I know that we checked the day after his arrest, and he was removed then. So maybe you buy the line that he had been off the team since spring. Maybe you don't. I am inclined to believe that he was likely to transfer and thus probably already knew that he wasn't in the plans. But at the same time, you talk to guys, he's been around the program still and working out like very recently. So this idea that he just hasn't been around at all, little too convenient for me. Certainly if I'm Florida State, I would pitch it the same way. I would try to say, yeah, that's really not an arrest on our watch because he was already off the roster. Maybe so, technically, but it's a little convenient that they didn't announce that at all until after he got arrested for it. Anyway, he takes FSU from 89 to 88. I think Kilby Lane takes him down to 87. I do not expect Jeremy Kerr back for a fifth year. Obviously, they have six tight ends. I profiled this on Tomahawk Nation, so I think that's potentially getting you down one more. And then I think there's a possibility Florida State loses another defensive lineman, maybe a running back since they have seven and Jimbo Fisher really does not share carries all that much. And I've heard rumblings that an offensive lineman, a third stringer type, may not make the grades, but we'll wait to see on that. I don't want to obviously put a kid's name out there about something like that until I know for sure. Just people have asked me, how do they get to 85 if the entire recruiting class qualifies? And I think they'll get there very easily. You have a number of kids who want to look elsewhere maybe for playing time. And that's not always a bad thing. In fact, I think kids transferring out for playing time elsewhere is a good thing because it shows that you still have a good competitive culture of kids who actually care about playing the game of football as opposed to just the perks you get for being a football player. Finally, two things here in the world of national college football. Ole Miss seems to be really digging in behind Hugh Freeze, which is really kind of surprising because I think there are limited options here as to what can happen with Hugh Freeze. On the one hand, stuff could come out that is so bad that you have to fire him, or maybe stuff not related to Freeze comes out, but the sanctions are so bad that it's just really hard for him to win, and you have to get rid of him anyway. Or Ole Miss could maybe win at the NCAA tribunal and or hearing or whatever you want to call it, and maybe all is just kind of status quo, but I doubt it. I do think the NCAA's investigation of this has been incredibly shady, and while I think it's pretty clear Ole Miss committed NCAA violations, and they even admit to it, I do think there's some sort of procedural unfairness in the investigative process that after reading Ole Miss's response to their notice of allegations amended, I don't think Ole Miss will necessarily win, but I do think they raise some sort of real concerning questions about the fairness and openness of the NCAA's process. I spoke to Stephen Godfrey about that, SB Nation senior reporter. You can check that out on the SB Nation college ball recruiting page. We had about a 45-minute conversation about how this affects Ole Miss and the rest of the SEC. Like, for instance, if Ole Miss goes down for cheating, do they start snitching everybody? Could that impact the league maybe like it did in the late 80s, early 90s when teams started just getting popped left and right for cheating because they kept turning each other in? I don't know. It's possible. And then finally, Bob Stoops retiring. A great coach. I mean, 18 seasons, None of them losing a national title. He won the Fiesta, Rose, Sugar, and Orange Bowls at different times. Playoff appearance, multiple BCS Bowls, I think 1-3 in title games. But, I mean, he lost to a USC team that was cheating its butt off. He lost to Urban Meyer, and he lost to Nick Saban. If you're going to lose national title games, losing to the Pete Carroll, Urban Meyer, and Nick Saban is not the worst way to do them. And he obviously won the one over Bobby Bowden and kind of a lame duck Mark Richt that, you know, maybe shouldn't have been coaching that game. Anyway, they gave their job to a kid named Lincoln Riley, who is 33 years old, which is only 1 year older than me. That really kind of makes you feel like you're not doing much with your life when the guy a year older than you gets to be the coach of Oklahoma. But I think Riley's really talented. And if you're going to take over a job like that, doing it with a Heisman contender in your first year, and a Texas team that's still rebuilding, and a Baylor team that's probably in shambles, that's kind of nice. I mean, not a lot of coaches get that kind of setup. Jimbo Fisher certainly didn't have that kind of talent when he took Florida State over. So if you're going to be a really young guy and succeed as a first-time head coach, at least Bob Stoops kind of stacked the deck for him. With that, I think that'll wrap this episode. We are at about 45 minutes. I'm not sure how long Judson, our editor and producer, will cut this down to, but probably something reasonable. You can find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, which is formerly known as iTunes, Google Play Music, and all the fine podcast apps out there, I believe. If you want to get us on another podcast app that you cannot find us on, just let us know. We'll look into it. We obviously want you all to be able to listen to us anywhere. We're also on SoundCloud. Please leave us a 5-star review if you've enjoyed the show. We never ask for money from y'all, just good reviews and constructive feedback. You can shoot that to us if you want at thenolcast@gmail.com or on Twitter @Nolcast. Thanks, everybody. I believe Jehovah Jireh. I believe there's heaven. I believe in war. And I believe you when you say that you've lost all faith, but you must believe in something, something. Cause I just don't believe we're wicked. I know that we sin, but I do believe we try. We all try, the girls try, the boys try.